You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers, as always. My name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and the Westside Community News, and today, after seven straight draft-related episodes, the lottery, draft prospects, trades, all that. If you want to hear that, look at any of the last week plus of episodes. We're going to turn back our attention to the player season recaps. We got three more player groups to go: starting guards, young wings, and reserve forwards. Today we'll take on the young wings, Chris Duarte, O'Shea Brissett, and Dwayne Washington. Our topics today, as a reminder of how we do these, we do one good and bad thing about the player season, one stat that tells it all, an area they need to grow, and what their future holds. With the Pacers, one segment per player. We'll break it all down today for each of those guys who all had very interesting seasons and are potentially, in the case of all three, a part of the Pacers' young core, depending a lot on how their next season goes. But the one who isn't potentially part of the Pacers' young core and is a lock to be so is Chris Duarte, named to the all-rookie, second-team all-rookie for the NBA last week. Well-deserved. He was the last guy to make the slot, but he was amazing for the first 2 months of the season. For the rookies, was one on the top of the Rookie of the Year leaderboards for the first couple weeks of the season. Really, really darling score. Totally outperformed his draft position at 13. Really talented player. So Chris Duarte, well-deserved for all-rookie. There's nothing that comes from being all-rookie besides just the accolade itself. First Pacer since Miles Turner. So there's nothing really to cover, just that it happened. And then, so when you look at Duarte's season, what really stands out, beyond that he was ready to play in the NBA as a rookie, which is pretty rare, right? Starting 39 times and being one of the Pacers' best options for a lot of the season at both the 2 and the 3. To me, what stood out about his season, beyond what was expected of him, is, you know, he already kind of is a 3-and-D wing, and he's only played 55 games in his career, right? Shot 37% from deep in his first year. Definitely looks like a good shooter, though. Takes a lot of tough shots, takes a lot of off-the-dribble shots, and still was able to be a really, really good shooter. I think that's what stood out a lot about him. And only, again, air quotes, because this is a low number for threes, but it sounds like a high number. Only about 3 out of 4 of his threes are assisted, right? He does take a lot of tougher shots. He creates them himself. And that projects really well for his shooting ability. So when I think back on what made Chris Duarte's rookie season so special, the 3-and-D aspect of his game really stood out to me, especially for a rookie to be, you know, drawing to the toughest or tough matchups every single night, to be able to hang with those guys, be really nosy and up in their face, a good tactical defender, good technical skills. Like, he was really good at the 3-and-D role, and I think that's going to provide him a lot of value and provide the Pacers a lot of value going forward, because he's already that base of player, that rarely, really rare and hard to find skill set, not necessarily as hard to find these days, but, you know, that is his base. His floor is he's going to be good at those two skills, and he's got other skills, right? He is the tough shot maker. He improved his playmaking throughout the season, but those are the two things that I will say were the best parts about his season and the things that stood out to me the most about Chris Duarte's all-rookie campaign. Now, what was bad about his season? I think the playmaking and reads in general, you know, he improved these throughout the season. Malcolm Brogdon was talking to him all the time throughout the season about how he can get better at, you know, these sort of things. Like, when he comes on a screen, Chris Duarte is always looking to shoot. When he gets cut off, it was very detrimental for him and the team quite often, because he didn't really have passing reads, right? He ended the season with 114 assists and 90 turnovers. So not a little over 1-to-1, but not too much so. Not a good creator for others yet, and that would really evolve his game, because he is good at snaking pick and rolls and getting around those screens to create a shot for himself, but he can't really create a shot for others. You know, pretty low assist rate in terms of advanced stats as well. And just kind of in general, his floor game, when he would get inside the three-point arc, I think really held him back from being a much better player, because he can make mid-range jumpers and unassisted ones at that. You know, he is a threat in there, but he doesn't have a floater. He's not an excellent in-the-lane finisher. Like, it's pretty easy to counter him, even when he gets a defender on his hip, or even when he is kind of going downhill a little bit, and there's someone at the basket, because he's not the best decision-maker. You know, if you cut off the shot, you have kind of neutralized the entire package of what he is trying to do. You're going to make him make a tough shot or completely reset the play. And that's somewhere he really has to grow, especially as a passer. You know, he never really had a throw-someone-open-level assist in his entire first season. So even though the 3-and-D floor was there, any sort of playmaking would make him, you know, much, much better, especially in the lane. Like, once he got into the paint, he was either shooting or coughing it up, it felt like, most of the season. And one stat that tells it all about Duarte's season, this is kind of reflective of both the good and bad things that I just mentioned, right? Chris Duarte shot 36.9% from three-point range. Chris Duarte also shot 36.9% from 3 to 10 feet this season, right? His floor game in the paint and inside of, you know, 15 feet, but outside of right at the rim is not very good. He does not have a floater. He doesn't have, like, a nice package of shots to go to from that range to create an advantage. And so he doesn't shoot them a ton. You know, he doesn't, like, go to that as much as he does the three or shots at the rim. But the fact that he's just as good of an outside shooter as he is in that range, and he only shot 38% from 10 to 16 feet, right? So basically from 3 feet to 15 feet out, he is not a good finisher at all. He's a much better finisher on long twos and threes. He's a much better jumper player in general. We know that. His tough shot making was part of his appeal as a rookie. But the fact that his percentage is so high and effective from long range, it's so terrible from 3 to 15 feet, kind of sums up his rookie year perfectly, especially in the offensive end to me, is that, you know, he's really effective from long range. He can get his own shot up. He can create threes for himself. He can score off screens, and that's all great. But as soon as he has to put it on the floor and go towards the basket, if he can't get all the way to the rim, it's very easy to slow down and neutralize what the Pacers and Duarte are trying to do. And I think if he can get any better at that, even if it's one or the other, a floater or a finishing move or passing and finishing and resetting quicker so that the defense is still shifted, he would be so much better, even though he's already a pretty dang good player. As a rookie, I remain very impressed with Chris Duarte's rookie season. I feel like I'm the only person who's, like, still pretty high on Chris Duarte. A lot of people are down on him, and I get why for some of the age reasons, but now I thought, I mean, he had a +3 on-off net rating this past season, was quality on both ends of the floor. I remain very high on his future, despite the fact that he's about to turn 25. And this is sort of a tangent just while I'm thinking about his age. But, you know, I think that he'll hit like, his prime or his like, ramping up to his peak stage of his career will be shorter than most guys. Like, he'll still decline in his 30s like everybody else. But I still think he'll improve from years 1 to 2 to 3. It's not like he's already a finished product just because of his age. I think years in the league is more important in terms of your growth, but age is still the most important in terms of your decline, if that makes any sense. Like, Buddy Hield, for example, was 24 in his first year, and he was a 10 points per game scorer. In his third year, he was a 21 points per game scorer. Like, those developments do happen still, even for older players who are more specialist-like players. Like, Buddy Hield very clearly got better at attacking the basket and a little bit better at passing and much better at rebounding. You know, those kind of things. It's ironic that Buddy's on the Pacers now. But even with, you know, from New Orleans to Sacramento, like, he clearly showed those sort of growth points that I think can apply to Chris Duarte. And I think he can get better in the lane and as a passer going forward. So what is his future with the team? Like I just said, I'm higher on him than most, it feels, at this stage. I think he's going to be a longtime starter for the Pacers, assuming he is not traded at any point on his current contract. They have 3 more years of the rookie deal. They'll pick up his third-year option at some point this offseason. And then restricted free agency, whatever comes after that. You know, if they don't trade him, they can have him for four to seven more years, essentially, guaranteed, like through his entire effective part of his career. Like, by the end of 8 years from now, he'll be 32 years old. Like, he could be at the end of that life. So, assuming he does not get traded, like, his entire career as a starting level player or whatever he is next to Tyrese Haliburton could be with the Indiana Pacers. So, because I'm quite high on him, I think he can fill that role and that level going forward. And I think he is a really good fit with Tyrese Haliburton, despite the fact that they didn't get to play together hardly at all. I mean, that was one of the biggest bummers to me of the whole Pacers season, is that we only got to see Chris Duarte and Tyrese Haliburton together for like 4 or 5 games. I don't remember what the exact number of games they ended up playing together was, but you know, that was kind of the point of the season where the Pacers were clearly going not to lose, but not trying to win as much. They only got 110 minutes of Haliburton plus Duarte, and they were pretty good in those minutes. They had a much better net rating in those minutes than they did in any other combination of one of Duarte or Haliburton off for the rest of the season. So I'm looking forward to seeing those two together, and I'm looking forward to seeing how Chris Duarte grows as a starter for this Pacers team at the 2, at the 3, whatever they decide to have him as. And, you know, he did remember when Brad Wanamaker was struggling, play the point guard position. He should not, but if he gets better at playmaking, that positional versatility could again come in handy for the Pacers. So a well-deserved all-rookie campaign for Chris Duarte, and I am very much looking forward to seeing how he grows his game going forward. Let's move on to another young forward wing, whatever you want to call this group. The last guy, Dwayne Washington's a guard, so I called this young wings. O'Shea Brissett, we covered his free agency already on this podcast earlier this offseason. We'll do it again now. We'll also talk about his season, his third season in the NBA, his second with the Pacers. Where did O'Shea Brissett shine and not, and all that. We'll get to it in a moment. Before we do that, though, I want to talk to you guys about Prize Picks. Prize Picks is daily fantasy made easy, and if you're looking for a new daily fantasy option for the NBA, look no further than Prize Picks. It's super easy to use. You pick 2 to 5 players and an over-under on all their projections. You can up to 10 times on any entry. It's just you versus the projected numbers. Entries can be made in 60 seconds or less. It's super easy. They offer safe and fast withdrawals, and you can use the award-winning app on both the App Store and Google Play. PrizePicks offers a variety of options, right? Any prop you can think of, points, rebounds, steals, you name it, they got it. You can do mixed sport entries, you know, MLB with NBA or NFL, when that's going on, whatever you want to do. They don't just offer those sports. They've also got MMA, college sports, soccer, and more. You got to try it. For a limited time, PrizePicks has an exclusive no-brainer of an offer for all of our listeners. You can get $50 for free if a player in your first PrizePicks entry scores a single point. But you got to use the code NBA. When you sign up. That's right. Exclusive offer for Locked On fans. Sign up today at PrizePicks. Use the code NBA for $50 for free. If a player in your first PrizePicks entry scores a single point, PrizePicks is daily fantasy made easy. Thank you, as always, for making Locked On Pacers your first listen today and every single day. For your second listen, I highly recommend Locked On NBA Big Board. Hear more about these draft prospects because I can't cover all of them here on Locked On Pacers. They're covering them every single day over at Locked On NBA Big Board. Let's dive into the season of none other than Mr. O'Shea Brissett, the second-year Pacer, third-year forward, what he did well and did not do well for the Pacers. His season was very interesting because he improved in some skills that it seemed like, you know, after his first year with the Pacers, hey, O'Shea, you know, if he got a little better at cutting and handling the ball, he'd be a much more dynamic player to add to this three and dunks guy that he was his first year with the Pacers. He was excellent playing off of Sabonis. But when he added those skills, he kind of relied on them a little more, and it kind of neutered his efficiency but upped his impact and diversity. So the diversity of his game, like putting it all together, I think he set himself up to be better in the future despite taking some statistical step backs this season, which makes his season a little difficult to assess. But when I think about what was good about O'Shea Brissett's season, beyond his wonderful team defense, one of the best weak side help defenders on this Pacers team, which was very rare for a team that was absolutely terrible at that for much of the season. Those two things are the things that stood out to me the most, the improved ball handling and the cutting, right? The handling was on display first in Summer League. Stunning that he even played in Summer League. They pulled him after two games because he was way too good for that competition in Vegas last year. But the way he was able to put the ball on the floor and score, even if it wasn't very often, maybe once a game, maybe twice a game, whatever, that still adds a lot to the way he's able to be defended. The percentage of his two-pointers that were assisted went down by 8% this season. His three-pointers that were assisted percentage went down as well. So that's obviously going to hurt your efficiency, creating those shots yourself. But growing in that way, you know, learning that skill is very valuable long-term. Like in the future, if someone's sagging really far off of you and you can bury their shot, that's great. But if they close out really hard and you can put it on the floor and get to the rim and score, now it's even harder for the guy to defend you. He's got to make a decision as he closes out. So yes, Brissett did lose three-point accuracy quite a bit, actually, and two-point accuracy this season. He did not finish nearly as well at the rim, but the fact that he was able to add the cutting, especially around Haliburton, and the handling allowed him to still be a very effective and dynamic offensive player for this Pacers team. But that was kind of what hurt his season, right? The lost efficiency was really killer, and you can just look at the three-point percentage. 35 is fine for the role he's supposed to play. Like, that's basically league average this year. It was a little bit of a down shooting year. But where I kind of stop with the efficiency with him, you know, you look at his true shooting, 63.8 his first season with the Pacers. That was unsustainably high. Like, he was taking the world's easiest threes with that team as the fifth starter, and it was only 21 games. Like, this year he started more games than he even played his first year with the Pacers. But the other part of it was at the rim, right? He's 71.4% in Toronto as a rookie at the rim, and then 73.5% his first year with the Pacers. And then this past season, 58.2. So he's creating a lot of those on his own, which again is naturally going to cause it to fall a little bit, but by 17%, my goodness, that was really killer for him and his effectiveness. He's got to be a better rim finisher if he's going to be one of those dynamic and effective cutters and ball handlers that can be a break glass in case of emergency option. Because O'Shea Brissett really should not be attacking the basket off the bounce like very often. Maybe once or twice a game when the defense is already broken, and that's good to have that in your bag. But if you can't finish at the rim in those instances, it doesn't really mean a whole lot. So it was good of him to grow those skills. It really helped the Pacers. It helped him be a more challenging to defend player. But if he can't finish at the rim and his three isn't falling as much, it doesn't do a whole lot. He's just sort of a body moving around. So combining the things that made him really good his first year with the Pacers and the things that he grew into his second year with the Pacers will make Brissett a much more well-rounded offensive player. Because on defense, I think his skills are really obvious, right? He's a very, very good team defender, one of the best on the Pacers, and not very good at defending the ball, right? Can easily get kind of bullied and isn't the best in isolation or on the perimeter or anything like that. But he's not bad, I would say. Like, he's got good foot speed and stuff like that. He just doesn't have the best instincts and timing when defending those instances, and I think that limits what his ceiling has been defensively. But he's got a lot of stuff he can clean up, and I think given his skill set, can do it. So what stats tell the story of O'Shea Brissett's season? One of them is a great thing. 67 games played. That doesn't sound like that much, but it was the most on the Pacers by quite a bit. He was the only guy to play over 60 games for the Pacers, eclipsing 67. And if you count that, most of the games he didn't play early in the season were chosen do not play by a coach's decision. He played basically healthy in about 90-95% of the Pacers games. Basically the only guy on the team to do that for the Pacers this year. And on a team that guys were unavailable all the time, being available means a lot. And I think the Pacers needed him out there all the time. Like, he was in the rotation even when everybody was healthy. He was basically the only rotation player that survived the season with the Pacers and played in most games and didn't really get hurt. On the flip side, though, the bad part, two stats that are kind of used as a barometer of certain offensive skills or certain offensive efficiency thresholds, right? Three-point attempt rate and free throw rate. How much are you getting threes up, and how much are you getting to the free throw line? Generally, if your three-point attempt rate drops, you would like your free throw rate to go up, because that means if you're taking less threes, you're attacking the basket more, shooting around the rim more. And Brissett's three-point attempt rate dropped from year one to year two with the Pacers. That makes sense, right? He went from a guy who was taking the world's easiest spot-up threes to a guy who was kind of dribbling a little more and cutting a lot more often alongside Tyrese Haliburton or whoever was playing point guard for the Pacers, LeVert or Brogdon or whoever. But his free throw rate went down by over 10% this season, right? He dramatically shifted in those two statistical areas in a way that is not very conducive to being an efficient player, and that's part of why his true shooting percentage dropped by 10% this season with the Pacers. So he's gotta be a little bit better at one of those. Either taking, like he did his first year with the Pacers, over half his shots from deep and kind of being a spacing guy, or getting to the line much more. 43% of the time he was able to do that his first year with the Pacers, or at least 43% of the time he got a shot up. It's hard to explain free throw rate by talking. 43% of the shot of the total pool of shots he took, counting field goal attempts and free throws, were free throws. That's the best way to describe it. This year that was down to 32.4%. So getting back to those more efficient areas, you know, you can't lose both, will really help him kind of get his true shooting percentage up and be a more efficient offensive player as he also grows in that on-ball defense area, which is my area for growth for O'Shea Brissett. If he can become more effective on-ball defender, he'd be a very, very well-rounded player. And he could sniff being a 3-and-D kind of guy. I don't think his three-pointer's quite that reliable. You know, he's only taken 310-ish with the Pacers so far. Like, that's not enough to get a real sample of how good a guy is at shooting threes, but he's close to being a 3-and-D kind of level guy. And especially if he could defend the ball, then I would call him that. But no one thinks of 3-and-D guys as being, you know, team defenders, but not necessarily on-ball defenders. The only guy I can think of who kind of fits that billing is Robert Covington, right? He's a good three-point shooter and a much better team defender than an on-ball defender, and he's kind of been given the 3-and-D label very often throughout his career, although even he is like a 36% three-point shooter. So I think it's possible for Brissett to get that label, but he's got to be a little bit better at both the three-part and the D-part, and I think the on-ball defense is a little more important for him. So what's Brissett's future with the team? Well, he was the very first free agency profile we did among all the Pacers players who will be or could be free agents this summer. And so to break down the situation, if you didn't hear that podcast, he has a team option in his contract for the minimum. If the Pacers pick it up, O'Shea Brissett will be on the 2022-23 Pacers on a minimum contract. And then at the end of that season, he'll become an unrestricted free agent. Or if the Pacers decline his team option before July 1st, they can then have him be a restricted free agent or sign him to a new contract for more years on the back end. And that's what I think is going to happen, because he'd be a restricted free agent. They could sign him to a longer-term deal, keep him around for longer. He's young. He can grow. You know, he's only 23 now, 22. I forget his exact age. I should just pull it up because it's right in front of me. At 23, he turns 24 in June, right? That's right around Haliburton's age. It's right around whoever you determine the on-court of his age, Chris Duarte, Miles Turner, Isaiah Jackson. He's right around all their age. Like, allowing him the opportunity to grow with the team makes a lot of sense. He won't become too expensive by declining his option, like at most a $6 or $7 million player. I think it's a no-brainer that the Pacers decline his team option and sign him to a little more money deal per year this offseason, but I would understand them deciding to keep him on a minimum deal. The only reason to decline it and not bring him back is to get max contract space, and even that doesn't make sense to me from the Pacers' perspective, he's on a minimum deal. Like, it's very easy to keep him back and any parameters that they want. So I believe O'Shea Brissett will be back on the team, and I think for him, the role that makes the most sense is a reserve forward. I don't think he should be a starter on this team. I don't think he's quite that level of player, but as a reserve guy and as a potential 3-and-D guy, I think he can fill many roles for this Pacers team going forward. All right, one more young wing, and this one admittedly was squeezing a guy into another group to make these shows have a good theme. Dwayne Washington, no one would really call him a wing, but he can shoot well enough that if he played on the wing, it wouldn't go terribly. Let's review his season and his upcoming free agency, and we'll also do him for a little bit of free agency talk coming up later this week. Excuse me, no, we will not. We're doing young forwards later this week. But let's talk about Dwayne Washington's first season with the Pacers, his rookie season. Before we do that, though, I want to talk about rockauto.com, who are bringing you this episode, and with the ever-increased numbers of makes and models of vehicles, it's impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. You got to go in there and endure the questioning from the guy behind the counter who doesn't know anything about the specs of your car, and then they don't have what you need in there, so they got to order it, and you got to go back and get it. And it's a huge pain. They only order the brand that their warehouse happens to carry. That's not helpful for you. You know what is helpful for you? A computer that you can access rockauto.com from, or your phone. Right in your pocket, you can access rockauto.com. And you can save time and money when you use Rock Auto. Why choose to spend 30%, 50%, maybe even 100% more for the same stuff when you can get it for cheaper at Rock Auto? They're a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over two decades. Their prices are always reliably low for every customer, and they have everything you need. Brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, even new carpet, you name it, they got it. Go explore their easy-to-use website today to find the solution to your auto parts needs. Go to rockauto.com right now to see all the parts available for your car or truck. Right, Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box, so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need at rockauto.com. Thank you, as always, for making Locked On Pacers your first listen today and every single day. For your second listen, I gotta ask you to check out Locked On NBA. Hear the latest and greatest about Heat Celtics game 4. My goodness, the Celtics shot terrible, and they still dominated that game. What a weird game in the National Blowout Association that we've got going on right now. Let's talk about Dwayne Washington's rookie season. A very interesting player, because a lot of the stuff he does well are skills that I kind of rate as very important or very high, but he has a lot of very, very huge, huge holes in his game that make projecting his future pretty tough unless he grows clearly in those areas. So the good things about Dwayne Washington's season is, one, he was a good shooter. They did not have very many of those this season. He took 8 threes per 36 minutes and hit 38% of them. That was clearly his shining skill on offense. He could hit threes, and like Chris Duarte, he could hit threes without needing to be set up, without needing to be a guy that they're running through a maze of screens or anything like that. He could catch it and shoot it, obviously, but he could also put it on the floor and shoot it and create it for himself. That's what made him such a valuable weapon on offense, is he could kill the three-point shooting no matter how they tried to get him open. I thought that made him really valuable. But the other thing that made him really valuable, and I think this was his most standout skill to me, more so than the shooting, when Dwayne Washington caught the ball, Greg Popovich would love him. Within half a second, he's either dribbling, passing, or shooting, right? There's no ball stoppage with Dwayne Washington. And it's not that they had a lot of ball stoppers on the Pacers this year, but even guys like Caris LeVert, like a pretty quick decision maker, even he would stop it and kind of reset it every so often, or pull it out of the play a little bit, or just stop and kind of assess what was going on. Dwayne never did that, right? Tyrese Haliburton sometimes even caught it and kind of assessed the situation. Dwayne very rarely did that. Washington would always be ready to pass, dribble, or shoot. My goodness, my words are all over the place in this segment. So that was something I thought was very valuable for him, and why the offense, when he was in the game, was so much better, right? They were just very effective at moving the ball, at getting good shots with him out there, because he provided spacing and that decision-making. I thought that made him quite the player. Now, the negatives of his rookie season. Number one, inside the arc game, not great. 43% on twos, did not finish well at the rim, shot, ended up the season shooting at the rim 54%. And was not a good passer. For a guard who can make quick decisions, his passing was not particularly strong. Right, he ended the season with 85 assists and 57 turnovers. That's not bad. It's also not great. You know, you got to improve as a passer if you're going to have the ball as often as he does. But I can't dance around it forever. The biggest problem with Dwayne Washington's rookie season was his defense. My goodness. Dwayne Washington's defense needs quite a bit of work. I mean, this was clearly his weak point as a rookie. And look, rookie guards almost always stink on defense. Like, this is not an unexpected thing. or anything like that, but he got, you know, he couldn't really stay in front of anybody. His team defense, he would get caught ball watching a lot. He was kind of floating away from the play. It was very hard to identify areas to me where he was a massive net positive or even a small net positive on the defensive end of the floor. And that's why, even though, you know, he was such a talented offensive player who could help on the end of the floor, he really was a net negative for the Pacers in terms of like net rating and impact, because, you know, especially on defense, they were so much worse when he was in the game on the end of the floor. Guys have to make up for him getting beat or him being out of position. It really, really hurt them. So as good as Dwayne Washington is on offense, and I would like to for the Pacers to, you know, kind of explore what they have with him this next season, I think if his defense doesn't get much better in his second season, it's going to be kind of hard to figure out what his role can be on a roster going forward. Because when I look at one stat that tells it all about Dwayne Washington's season, 5 points per 100 possessions worse on defense with him in the game than on the bench. And nearly a 120 defensive rating with Dwayne Washington in the game, and only 115 with him on the bench. That's not that good, but I mean, that is a huge number. And his defensive BPM is terrible, -3-ish, -2.8 is what it finished the season at. You know, those kind of show, and those match the eye test in terms of impact stats, that he's got to be better on that end of the floor. Because again, I think his offense can keep up, even with guys that are more experienced than him. You know, he's got the skills to be a useful offensive player around veterans or around young guys as a kind of a gunner. I think he can be a microwave score kind of role guy, but he's got to be better on defense if he wants to be on the floor. So that's really important. And my area for growth for him, same kind of deal, defense. And, like, there are things he can work on offense, right? Like, some in-the-lane kind of finishes, kind of like Duarte with the floater. A few more advanced passes would help him a little bit as well. But as a 38% three-point shooter who can get it up from anywhere, that's fine. He'll be fine as an offensive player. He's got to improve on the defensive end. I think that's where much of his career will matter. And if he does end up on the Pacers this coming year, which we'll talk about in a second, I think he's got to improve on defense if he wants to make it to the third year with the Pacers or a third year in the NBA. So beyond that, what's his future with the team? We have not, you know, we kind of talked about his free agency a few weeks ago on the reserve guards free agency preview of guys who are kind of free agents and kind of not. He's got a non-guaranteed contract this summer. Dwayne Washington is on a minimum deal next season at $1.5 million. And it becomes fully guaranteed on July 6th, which is right after the moratorium. That's nice for the Pacers. They can go into free agency and then make that decision. Here's what I'll say, though. It's a minimum contract. He's young and was on the team last year and valuable. It seems like both him and Terry Taylor are in this boat where it makes no sense to move on from them. That is exactly who the Pacers should want to have be their kind of end-of-bench guys or deeper bench guys. Is young dudes who you know fit your system and know fit your culture and could be something special, but you don't know, and you got to explore that. As kind of a rebuilding team, that makes all the sense in the world to keep those guys around. So I think the Pacers should keep Dwayne Washington around next season. I think that makes the most sense given his contract situation. Here's where the pushback comes. It's a minimum deal. You can re-sign that at any time. Perhaps if, again, they decide, okay, if we move on from Dwayne, we can get to max cap space easier. And it would require a couple more moves than just that. But, you know, I think if the Pacers move on from, like, two of Brissett, Washington, and Terry Taylor, like right at the beginning of free agency. And again, they could bring all those guys back even after cutting them. But if they make moves that get rid of those guys early in free agency, I would immediately perk my eyebrows and ears up that they're about to sign somebody for a lot of money, because that's the only reason to move on from those guys. Like cutting, saving $1.5 million of cap space when you already have one of the top six cap space amounts in the league is pretty pointless, right? You're not actually gaining that much spending power by doing that at that point. You know, there's a diminishing returns at some point of cap space, and I think the Pacers are already well over that number in terms of their max space. So I think there's no reason for them to move on from Dwayne Washington. Maybe they move his guaranteed date back or something, but again, I think they'll just bring him in as a minimum guy this season and have him be kind of a depth guard. I don't think he'll be in the rotation at the start of the season, but you know, maybe they bring back Brogdon and they'll need guard depth if they bring him back, or you know, maybe they just want more guard depth because guys get hurt in the NBA. Yeah, it makes all the sense to bring him back, both as a depth guard and as a guy who could just grow and be better. Like, if he gets any semblance of positive value on defense, Dwayne Washington suddenly becomes a hell of a player that you want to have around if you're any franchise, including the Indiana Pacers. So there we go. Reviews for some young wings. I enjoyed watching all of these guys this season. Duarte obviously was a very special rookie. Dwayne Washington really came on the scene, and the Pacers scouting department gets a win there for finding a two-way guy that they signed right after the draft. And O'Shea Brissett, another scouting department win. They drafted him in the G League draft 2 years ago, and he was something special for them these last two seasons. I'm looking forward to seeing where his career takes them. Tomorrow, we're back on the free agency previews grind, and we'll do three guys who don't necessarily merit a whole show, but definitely merit a full segment. Reserve forwards Terry Taylor, Justin Anderson, and then the two two-way guys, Nate Hinton and Gabe York. What do their free agencies look like? Why should the Pacers consider bringing them back? Is there an argument against bringing them back? We'll break it all down tomorrow on those free agency shows. I know that those have been something that you guys like to hear and kind of see all the options laid out in front of you. And then later this week, we'll do another one of these player season recaps and another prospect review on Friday with a guest who more is in tune with college basketball. Thank you guys a ton for listening, and we will see you tomorrow.